Hey there, and welcome to Your Deep Dive, listeners. Today, we're taking you on a journey through time to uncover the fascinating story of the Cleveland Ironstone Mines. Get ready, because we're not just talking about rocks and mine shafts. We're talking about a Jurassic sea turned industrial powerhouse, a story of booms and busts, and even an unexpected connection to a certain iconic bridge down under.
It's amazing to think that millions of years before the first miner even picked up a pickaxe, the very ground beneath their feet was once submerged beneath an ancient ocean.
Okay, hold on. You're going to have to paint me a picture here. What did this area actually look like all those millions of years ago? I mean, Cleveland is a tropical paradise.
Think early Jurassic period, roughly 200 to 175 million years ago. Instead of the rolling hills and Victorian architecture you might associate with Cleveland today, picture a warm, shallow sea teeming with prehistoric life, very different from the landscape we know today. Over eons, layers of sediment, mudstones, shale, siltstones, all those things accumulated on the seabed, building up like a giant underwater layer cake.
So how did this ancient seabed turn into something as valuable as ironstone? We're not talking about a little bit of iron here. This stuff fueled an industrial revolution. It's mind-boggling.
And that's where the story gets really interesting. See, those sediments, they contained iron, maybe not huge amounts at first, but enough to be significant. Over time, the weight of newer sediment layers compressed those older layers, squeezing out the water and turning that loose sediment into solid rock. This process, combined with the ancient seafloor's chemistry, is what concentrated the iron and created those characteristic iron-bearing minerals.
So nature spent millions of years making this iron-rich rock. But what kind of iron are we talking about specifically? I mean, what made it so valuable to industry?
Well, two of the most important iron minerals found in Cleveland ironstone are siderite, which is an iron carbonate, and berthurine, an iron silicate. These minerals essentially lock the iron within the rock, making it possible to mine and process on a massive scale. But you're right, not all ironstone is created equal.
Right, exactly. What made Cleveland ironstone so special? I mean, why not get your iron from somewhere else?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The economic viability of any ironstone deposit really boils down to a few key factors. First, you've got the iron content, obviously. The higher the percentage of iron in the rock, the more desirable it was for industries. Then, you have to consider the thickness of the ironstone seam itself. A thicker seam meant more bang for your buck, making it economically viable to extract.
Makes sense. The easier and more abundant the iron source, the better. But it wasn't just about digging up the rock, was it? You had to do something with it, right?
Exactly. And that's where the presence of other minerals in the ironstone comes into play. For example, shale was common in the Cleveland ironstone formation. Too much shale. And it could really complicate the extraction and processing, affecting the final quality of the iron.
So it was a delicate dance between geology and industry. You need that sweet spot of the right iron content, easy extraction, and efficient processing to make it all worthwhile. It's a fascinating balancing act when you think about it. But this wasn't a new discovery, was it? Didn't they find evidence that people were using this way before the 19th century?
Absolutely. We actually see evidence of early mining attempts going all the way back to the Iron Age. These early communities, they recognized the potential of this readily available iron source. There are even signs pointing to Roman ironworking in the region.
Wow, talk about ancient history. Do we have any specific examples of those early operations? What were they making with this iron?
One really captivating example is Ravo Abbey. There's clear evidence of extensive ironworking happening there, with large heaps of slag, a byproduct of iron smelting found near the abbey. They even went so far as to divert water sources to help transport the incredibly heavy ironstone to the monastery.
Monks, iron, and medieval engineering? That's not exactly what comes to mind when you think about monasteries.
You got that right. It seems this early ironworking was primarily focused on a layer of ironstone known as the Dogger Seam. And get this, after the dissolution of the monasteries, the Earl of Rutland, who acquired Ravo Abbey, he kept the ironworks going. They even added a blast furnace in the late 16th century and upgraded the forge in the early 1600s.
So the Cleveland iron industry was already up and running, even before the Industrial Revolution. But I'm guessing things really took off in the 19th century, right?
Oh, absolutely. The 19th century is when things really went into overdrive for Cleveland ironstone. It was a combination of almost accidental discoveries and some really savvy business decisions that really ignited the boom.
Okay, I love a good origin story. Give me the details. What sparked this incredible surge in the ironstone industry?
Well, you're not going to believe how it all started. The discovery that truly ignited the Cleveland ironstone boom happened in a rather unexpected way. during the construction of the Whitby and Pickering Railway near Grosmont. Imagine that, laying down tracks for a railway and boom, you unearth an industrial gold mine.
Talk about being in the right place at the right time. What did they find that was so special? Was it like a super seam of ironstone or something?
This game-changing discovery was the Pecten seam, a thick layer of ironstone just ripe for the taking. But here's the thing. At first, it didn't seem special at all. In fact, the newly formed Whitby Stone Company, eager to capitalize on their find, they sent a shipment of this Pecten seam ironstone to the Burtley Iron Company. And you know what? It was rejected, deemed poor quality.
Oh no, what a letdown. What happened? Did they just give up on it?
Thankfully, no. What followed is a testament to human persistence, a little bit of luck, and a whole lot of innovation. You see, both the Whitby Stone Company and the Burtley Iron Company, they recognized that there was something special, some untapped potential, lurking within this seemingly low-quality ironstone.
So what did they do? It's not like they could just snap their fingers and make the ironstone better, right?
No magic involved. Just good old-fashioned problem-solving. The two companies, they put their heads together, rolled up their sleeves, and figured out how to work with the Pecten seam's unique properties. This wasn't about changing the ironstone. It was about adapting to what nature gave them. They eventually struck a deal, and that, my friend, marked the beginning of the Cleveland ironstone boom.
That's an amazing example of how even a setback can lead to something incredible when you've got a bit of ingenuity and collaboration on your side. But this boom wasn't just about stumbling upon a lucky find, was it? There had to be other factors at play.
Oh, absolutely. It was a perfect storm of circumstances.
Give me some historical context. What else was happening in the world that allowed Cleveland to capitalize on its ironstone resources?
Well, for one, the Industrial Revolution was in full swing, and the demand for iron, the backbone of industry, was skyrocketing. They needed iron for everything, building factories, machines, bridges, ships, you name it.
So the timing was perfect. Cleveland had the iron, and the world needed it.
Exactly. It was a match made in industrial heaven. Add to that the significant technological advancements of the time. Steam engines were becoming more powerful and efficient, which meant they could extract and transport larger quantities of ironstone with greater speed.
It's like all the pieces of the puzzle just fell into place. The ironstone, the demand, and the technology all converged to create this perfect environment for growth.
And let's not forget about the human element. The rapid growth of the ironstone industry in Cleveland acted like a magnet, drawing workers from all corners. It transformed the region's demographics and social fabric practically overnight.
It's amazing how a geological formation, millions of years in the making, could spark such profound change in what, relatively speaking, is a brief period.
It really is a testament to how interconnected everything is, from geology and technology to economics and human ingenuity.
Speaking of stories, we've only just scratched the surface of this fascinating chapter in Cleveland's history. We've gone from ancient seas to the cusp of an industrial boom, and I can't wait to see where this journey takes us next.
It was a real turning point for the region, that's for sure. You had this quiet, mostly rural landscape with farms and small villages suddenly transforming into a bustling hub of heavy industry, all thanks to this abundance of Cleveland ironstone. It must have been quite a sight to see.
It must have been incredible to witness those first mines springing up, forever changing the landscape. So where did it all begin? Which mine really marked the start of this industrial surge?
The pioneer, the one that set the stage for this dramatic transformation, was Skinning Grove. Opening in 1848, this mine really marked the start of something special in Cleveland's history. And it wasn't long before the entire industry seemed to explode with activity. By the mid-1850s, just 7 years after Skinning Grove opened, over 500,000 tons of ironstone were being extracted every year.
500,000 tons? That's just an incredible amount of ironstone. This rapid expansion must have had a huge impact on the area and the people who lived there. What were those early mining communities like?
The impact was profound. New settlements sprang up almost overnight to house the influx of workers drawn to the mines. Towns like North Skelton, Boosbeck, Lingdale. These communities owe their very existence to the ironstone boom. They materialized from the dust and dreams of this burgeoning industry, forever changing the face of Cleveland.
It's amazing how these towns emerged so quickly, fueled by this insatiable hunger for Cleveland ironstone. It wasn't just about building houses, though, was it? This was about creating a new way of life.
Exactly. The social impact of the ironstone boom was just as significant as the physical changes to the landscape. People who had, for generations, relied on agriculture for their livelihoods were drawn to the mines, enticed by the prospect of regular wages and a different pace of life.
I imagine the shift from a rural life to the demanding and often dangerous work in the mines wasn't without its challenges. Did this new way of life create social tensions or lead to new forms of community?
It was a time of significant social upheaval. This rapid influx of workers from diverse backgrounds led to the emergence of a new working-class culture, one characterized by both hardship and camaraderie. The inherent risks of mining, the shared dangers faced day in and day out, often forge a powerful sense of community and solidarity amongst the workers.
There's a certain bond that forms when you face challenges together, but this new way of life also left its mark on the physical landscape, didn't it? When I think of these mining towns, I picture those long rows of terraced cottages, a signature look of that era.
You're picturing it perfectly. Those iconic rows of terraced cottages became a defining feature of mining towns across the region, from Skelton and Broughton to Skinning Grove and Loftus. And it's interesting to note that these houses, often built by the mining companies themselves, weren't just practical solutions to housing needs. They reflected the paternalistic approach of some mine owners, who sought to exert a degree of control over the lives of their workers, even outside the mine shafts.
It's a reminder that progress, as we often call it, is a complex thing. It can bring about positive change while also creating new forms of social control and inequality. But let's talk about the reach of this industry. Earlier, you hinted that Cleveland Ironstone was used in bridges all around the world. Did I hear that right?
You heard correctly. And we're not just talking about any bridges. Cleveland's Ironstone played a crucial role in some of the most iconic feats of engineering of that era. Structures that stand today as testaments to both human ingenuity and the global reach of Cleveland's ironstone industry.
Okay, now you have to give me some specifics. We're talking about world-famous bridges built with Cleveland ironstone. Which ones?
This might surprise you, but Cleveland ironstone was shipped all the way to Australia, where it was used in the construction of the Sydney Harbour Bridge.
No way! From the mines of Cleveland to one of the most recognizable bridges in the world, that's an incredible journey. Talk about making a lasting impact.
It really is a testament to the remarkable quality and global demand for Cleveland ironstone during its peak. The Tees Valley wasn't just supplying iron, it was supplying the very materials used to build the modern world, literally connecting continents with its industrial might.
It's mind-boggling to think about those miners toiling away, unaware that their hard work was contributing to something so grand on the other side of the globe. But as with any boom, there are bound to be ebbs and flows. What happened after this initial explosive surge in Cleveland ironstone production? Did the good times last?
You've hit the nail on the head. The path of progress, you see, it's rarely a smooth one. The Cleveland ironstone industry, like many others, experienced its fair share of highs and lows, periods of both remarkable prosperity and difficult hardship. In each of these periods, they left their mark on the region, shaping its destiny in really profound ways.
All right, so let's delve into those turbulent times. What were some of the major obstacles faced by the Cleveland ironstone industry? What were the challenges that threatened to derail this industrial powerhouse?
Well, one of the first major hurdles emerged in the 1870s, with an economic downturn that hit the industry pretty hard.
So just a couple of decades after things took off, they were facing a major setback. How did the industry cope with this sudden change in fortune? Did they weather the storm?
The ironstone trade, much like the stock market today, was susceptible to the often unpredictable swings of boom and bust cycles. The downturn of the 1870s, it led to mine closures and forced companies to consolidate as they desperately tried to adapt to this shifting economic landscape. But this is where things get really interesting. You see, on the horizon, a new wave of innovation was about to sweep the globe, and it would breathe new life into the struggling Cleveland ironstone industry.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat. What innovations emerged from this period of economic uncertainty? Was it something that saved the industry, or were there more challenges ahead?
The 1880s witnessed the meteoric rise of steel production. This wasn't just any change. This was a game changer for industries across the board. And what drove this pivotal shift? The Bessemer Converter.
The Bessemer Converter. I've heard the name, but give me a quick refresher. How did this invention revolutionize steelmaking? And what did it mean for the future of Cleveland ironstone?
Imagine this. The Bessemer Converter offered a revolutionary way to transform iron into steel, a process that was significantly faster, more efficient, and more cost-effective than ever before. But here's the crucial part. Cleveland ironstone, with its unique properties, proved to be incredibly well-suited for use with the Bessemer Converter.
So it was a match made in industrial heaven. This seemingly insignificant geological formation, born from an ancient sea, was now at the heart of a technological revolution.
Precisely. The Bessemer Converter breathed new life into the Cleveland ironstone industry. Demand surged once again, leading to the establishment of a whole new generation of ironworks along the Ritter Tees.
It's an inspiring testament to the resilience of both the people and the industry itself. Faced with economic hardship, they adapted, they innovated, and ultimately they thrived. But the story doesn't end there, does it? I can only imagine the impact of the world wars on this burgeoning industry.
You're right, the challenges were far from over. The 20th century, for all its progress, brought with it two devastating world wars, and their impact on the Cleveland ironstone industry was profound, leading to closures and consolidation on a scale never seen before.
It's hard to imagine any corner of the world remaining untouched by the global upheaval of the world wars. How did the Cleveland ironstone industry, once a symbol of industrial might, fare during this period of unprecedented conflict?
In times of war, resources, particularly those as essential as iron and steel, often get diverted to support the war effort. That's precisely what happened with Cleveland Ironstone. Many mines, deemed non-essential to the war effort, were forced to close as demand shifted towards wartime production. This was an incredibly difficult time for countless mining communities who relied on the industry for their livelihood.
It's a poignant reminder of the human cost of conflict, even on industries seemingly far removed from the front lines. It's easy to get caught up in the grand narratives of war, but behind those narratives are countless individual stories of hardship and resilience. So, what awaited the Cleveland ironstone industry after the dust settled? Was it able to recover from the turmoil of two world wars?
The world that emerged from World War II was a very different one, and the Cleveland ironstone industry, despite its best efforts to modernize and remain competitive, faced an increasingly uphill battle.
What were the key factors that contributed to this decline? Was it simply a matter of recovering from the disruptions of war, or were there larger forces at play?
It was a perfect storm of challenges, really, a confluence of factors that ultimately proved insurmountable. One of the biggest blows came from the rise of competition from imported ore. You see, other parts of the world could extract and ship iron ore at significantly lower costs, making Cleveland ironstone less economically viable.
So, globalization and the interconnectedness of global markets played a role in shaping the fate of this once isolated industry. Were there any other challenges that factored into the decline?
Another significant challenge came from within the UK itself in the form of open cast mining. This method, which was being increasingly employed in areas like Scunthorpe and Corby, offered a more cost-effective way to extract ironstone, dealing a further blow to the traditional deep mining methods prevalent in Cleveland.
So it was a combination of global competition and technological advancements that ultimately chipped away at the dominance of Cleveland ironstone. It's almost like a perfect storm in reverse this time. The forces aligned to bring about the end of an era rather than the start of one.
You could say that. Despite valiant attempts to adapt, to find new ways to remain competitive in a rapidly changing world, the writing was on the wall. The last of the Cleveland ironstone mines, North Skelton Mine, a poignant symbol of an era bygone, finally closed its doors in 1964.
What a bittersweet moment that must have been. The end of an era, the last echoes of a once booming industry fading into the annals of history.
Indeed. But while the mines themselves may have closed, their legacy lives on, not just in the physical scars they left on the landscape, but also in the stories, the memories, and the very fabric of the communities they helped build.
And what stories they are. We've journeyed from the depths of an ancient sea to the heights of an industrial boom, and ultimately to the quiet closure of the last mine. It's been quite the roller coaster ride through history. But before we wrap up this deep dive, I'm eager to delve a little deeper into some of the specific mines that shaped this remarkable story. Each mine, I imagine, has its own unique tale to tell.
Absolutely. Each mine, with its own quirks and characteristics, offers a unique window into the challenges, triumphs, and ultimately the profound human impact of Cleveland's ironstone industry.
When we return, let's shine a spotlight on a few of these individual mines, bringing their unique histories to life and uncovering the personal stories woven into the grand narrative of Cleveland ironstone. Stay tuned. You won't want to miss it. All right, we've covered the rise and fall of the Cleveland ironstone industry, but I'm ready to get up close and personal with some of those specific mines that shaped this story. Let's start with the Kilton and Lumpsey mines. I understand they left quite a mark on the landscape, literally.
Oh, you could say that.
Yeah.
Even today, long after the clang of machinery has faded, the Kilton mines, situated south of Kiltonthorpe, still make their presence known. Picture a massive spoil tip, a towering mound of waste material left behind after decades of mining. dominating the skyline. It's a stark yet strangely compelling reminder of the industrial activity that once pulsed through this landscape.
A spoil tip, you say? So not just a hole in the ground, but a whole new mountain created by the discarded rock.
Exactly. It's almost poetic when you think about it.
Mm.
The sheer scale of transformation. You see, both Kilton and Lumpsey mines, they relied heavily on railways to transport the ironstone to the furnaces and factories. And while the mines themselves have long since been abandoned, swallowed by time and nature, you can still trace the roots of those railways. The remnants of embankments and cuttings, they snake across the landscape like ghostly veins, whispering tales of a bygone era.
I find it fascinating how these echoes of the past linger, those subtle clues that hint at the industries that once shaped the world around us. So Kilton's claim to fame is this impressive spoil tip. What about Lumpsey? What makes its story unique?
Lumpsey offers a bit of a poignant glimpse into the sometimes unforeseen consequences of progress. See, before ironstone was discovered beneath its fields, Lumpsey was home to a thriving farm, a place where generations had worked the land.
It's a reminder that progress, for all its benefits, often comes at a cost. What happened to the farm when the ironstone was discovered?
Sadly, the discovery of ironstone spelled the end of the farm. The establishment of the Lumpsey mine in the late 19th century led to its complete destruction. Its fields were swallowed by mine shafts and infrastructure. A handful of the mine buildings have managed to survive, though, weathered yet resolute. They stand as silent witnesses, testaments to Lumpsey's industrial past.
It's almost as if these remnants spark a silent dialogue between the past and the present, prompting us to consider the complexities of progress. Now, you mentioned a cluster of mines around Great Ayton, Rosebery, Gribdale, and Ayton Mine. These names ring a bell, but I need a little refresher. What made these mines noteworthy contributors to the Cleveland Ironstone saga?
These three mines, each with its own distinct personality and challenges, played a vital role in feeding the insatiable appetite of the Industrial Revolution. Ayton Banks, also known as Gribdale, was a relatively small operation, active from 1910 to 1921. Managed by the Tees Furnace Company, they primarily focused on extracting ironstone from, you guessed it, the Pecten Seam.
The Pecten Seam, the underdog of ironstone layers. Initially rejected, but ultimately instrumental to the entire boom. Now that's a comeback story for the history books.
Absolutely. Now what sets these mines apart, aside from their namesakes, is their embrace of different mining techniques, ingeniously adapted to the unique challenges of the landscape. While many mines in the region favored the pillar and stall method, you can picture a giant chessboard pattern carved out underground with pillars of unmined ironstone supporting the roof. Ayton Mine took a different approach.
Intriguing. What was their preferred method? I'm picturing something a bit less like a chessboard and a bit more, well, adventurous.
They were all about drifts or adits to access the ironstone. Picture this. Horizontal tunnels dug directly into the hillside, following the natural lie of the ironstone seam. Unlike the vertical shafts, drifts allowed the miners to access the ironstone more directly, sometimes even using gravity to their advantage.
So a more horizontal approach to mining, working with the landscape rather than against it, sounds incredibly efficient.
Precisely. And just as they innovated with their mining methods, each of these mines had its own ingenious solutions for transporting the ironstone. While Rosebery and Ayton relied on tramways to move the ore to the main railway line, Ayton Banks opted for a more, shall we say, unconventional approach.
Okay, now you have me on the edge of my seat. Unconventional transportation of iron ore. I'm all ears.
Picture a complex network of overhead cableways strung between sturdy metal pillars. This aerial ropeway, a marvel of early 20th century engineering, ferried the ironstone from the heights of the Ayton Banks mine down to the waiting railhead below.
Wow, talk about taking the scenic route. It sounds like something straight out of an Industrial Revolution adventure novel. What an incredible feat of engineering.
It really is. This aerial ropeway stands as a testament to human ingenuity, a symbol of the lengths to which they would go to extract this valuable resource.
What an incredible journey this has been. We started with a prehistoric sea, delved into the heart of industrial innovations that reshaped landscapes and lives, and zoomed in on the ingenuity and personal stories embedded within individual minds. And we've only just scratched the surface. It's a tale of ambition, innovation, and the enduring spirit of the people who built this industry.
It really highlights how a simple geological formation born from an ancient sea could have such a profound impact on the course of history.
It's a powerful reminder that history isn't just about dates and names in textbooks. It's about the interconnectedness of geology, economics, and most importantly, the human stories. While the roar of those mines has long since faded, their legacy echoes through the present, shaping the landscape, the economy, and the very identity of Cleveland. I think it's safe to say that the Cleveland Ironstone Mines have left an indelible mark, not just on the landscape, but on our collective memory. Their story is a testament to human ingenuity, the power of innovation, and the enduring impact of our planet's buried treasures. From ancient seas to industrial titans, the journey of Cleveland Ironstone is a captivating reminder that the past is never truly gone. It's woven into the very fabric of the present.
It really is a story for the ages.
It certainly is. And on that note, we'll leave you to contemplate the lasting impact of the Cleveland Ironstone Mines. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep into the stories that surround you.